Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
I don't know how long I've known Tom Rangette. How long has it been, Tom? Have we known each other?
Ooh, it's probably going on a half a dozen years or better now.
Really? And how did I initially get to know you? Do you remember how we got to know each other a little bit? Through somebody else, maybe, or what?
I don't really know. It was something to do with fishing in Alaska, I believe.
I know. Somehow. We did a show on that, but I mean, how did I ever get to know you?
Boy, I don't really know, TJ. Isn't that weird? I can't think of it.
You must have known somebody that I knew, and they said, talk to this guy. Because I remember I did a show on our AM station, and you were on, either you came in or you were on with me on that. I was filling in for a guy, and we did a show there. And then I did the podcast, and we talked about your fishing in Alaska, which I found really interesting. And I guess what I find interesting about you, and you're from Garden, Michigan, right?
Right.
You have a wife and three sons.
Yep.
And you've been living there pretty much your whole life?
Whole life,
yeah. Garden, Michigan is about maybe an hour from where I'm doing this broadcast. It's right on Big Beta Knock, beautiful spot, right?
Yeah, the Garden Peninsula.
What do you like about living out there, Tom?
It's just, I guess it's where I was born and raised, and I've been in every state but Hawaii, and I don't know, I just haven't found a better place.
Really?
The people, I guess, and everyone knows each other, and I don't know. It's a beautiful area.
It is beautiful. There's something about being on the Great Lakes. Really is kind of neat. And then all the wilderness we have up here too, right?
Right.
You're a kind of guy, do you fish and hunt to do all that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you make a good part of your living now catching salmon.
Yep. I go to Alaska every summer for about 60 days and commercially fish sockeye salmon.
Now, where does that... I had a map, actually, in the last show that we did together. I put it up there so people could see. But it's south of the Aleutians, right?
Yeah, it's just on the south side of the Aleutian chain. There's an inlet that goes up to Anchorage, Alaska, called Cook Inlet. And we're allowed to fish a portion of Cook Inlet.
We're going to share some of these stories because, you know, what I like about Tom is that he's one of these people that... I think he leads a life that most of us probably should. Now, I'm glad I don't because you work really hard. But I can see how your family, you have a thing called a fish house. You start doing that, right?
Yeah.
You do that at the fairs. And they get these fish, really fresh white fish, usually white fish, right?
From the Peterson brothers and Hermes fisheries down in Garden.
Right down in Garden. And you drive down there. You're willing to take the time. How many people would do that, you think? You go over there in the morning. It's a long day for you.
Yeah.
And you get the fish and you bring it back to your fish house. You sell it at the fairs and the different locations. And people just love it, right? It's taken off.
Yeah, it's really, really done really well. And the thing is the fish are only a few hours old. The fillets are only a few
hours old.
That's what makes it so good.
And the thing is, you're willing to do that. And all your family pulls together. And that's what I think is so awesome about you guys. And I was telling you before we start talking that it reminds me of the way things used to be. Because my family was kind of like that when I was a kid. We all pulled together and everybody had to do their thing, you know. And there was a time in this country and the world, really, where if you didn't all pitch in, you wouldn't survive.
Oh, definitely.
And you've been through a lot of tough times, haven't you?
Oh, definitely. I remember the days when I was young that we'd go out to the chicken coop, and as much as you didn't like it, we had to butcher chickens, you know, in the fall to make her through the winter. And as much as you name the chickens and this and that,
right?
Still had to be done.
Yeah, it's a way to sustain yourself. So when did you start fishing in Alaska?
Next season will be my 10th year, but I did it for about 4 or 5 years from about 80 to 85.
And prior to that, you probably had a... It must be tough to survive out in where you live because there's not a lot of industry out there.
Oh, I've done it all out in gardens because after I quit fishing in 85, I got married, and it had been like 20 years since I'd been back to Alaska. I had superintendent of a golf course down there, and carpenter work and, you know, just about everything, just trying to survive.
Yeah, and that's what it is up here. People have to be, you know, if you live like near Escanaba or Marquette or some of the cities, you probably can find some work. But if you live away from there, you know, there's a lot of people that are lumberjacks up here or that cut wood. And so those are the kind of things you have to do to put, you know, food on the table. And it, some people are very hardy people. And that's what I guess I would define you, Tom, and you and your family. And you're not afraid to do whatever it takes physically to provide for your family. You ever worry about the day when you maybe physically can't do that?
It's already starting to get there, TJ. I've been doing some carpenter work lately since I've been back from Alaska, and man, it's hard getting up and down.
The body can only go for so long.
Unbelievable, right? Yeah.
And you're if you saw this guy, he's in incredible shape. But joints are only going to last so long, right?
Yeah, that seems to be the biggest problem is my wheels, the knees, and ankles and stuff like that. Old high school football injuries coming back to haunt me.
Do you drink any water at all?
I try to drink lots of water.
Okay, that's good. That's good for your joints. So you were up in Alaska this year. How did you do fish-wise?
We had another very good season again this year. The fleet, I think, as a fleet, we caught like 5 million sockeye salmon, which is a pretty good year up there. The biggest reason the drift fleet caught so many is the set net sites that are on the beach weren't allowed to fish because the giant king salmon, which get up to 80, 90 pounds, that go up the Kenai River, they follow the beach, and there wasn't very many kings going up the river because they have counters that'll count them. And so they shut down all the sports fishing on the Kenai River and guide service, and then they shut down all the set netters with the set net sites on the beach. And so they had such a big run of sockeye salmon that they gave us day after day after day. Usually we're only allowed to fish Monday and Thursday, and they gave us like 10, 15 days in a row this year.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could be unpredictable from year to year, right?
Oh, yeah, you don't know. I've went up there and made less than $20,000 and go up there the next year and make over $100,000, so you never know.
And prior to you doing this, you weren't rolling in the dough.
So. No, and I'm really still not.
But you're doing a lot better.
I mean, I was just living check to check and just getting by with three boys and the house payment and all that, and decided in 2004 to take a chance. The price of permits weren't very good. The price of fish wasn't the best. And I bought a permit and leased the boat the first year. Then the second year, I bought my own boat. And slowly the years started to improve. And slowly we started to get a better price for our fish. And the last 3 years have been phenomenal.
Isn't that something? And I think your spirit and attitude has so much to do with life, you know, whether you succeed or not. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, definitely. It's like when you're up there, there's a lot of times when you wake up in the morning and you can hear it's blowing and it's raining out and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and the sun's just maybe starting to rise up in Alaska. It doesn't get dark much in the summer, and it's miserable, and you know you've got to go 30, 40 miles down south to get down where the fish are. And there's lots of days when you'd like to just curl back up in bed and not go. But
how big do the waves get out there?
The first good period we had this year where the fleet caught a few fish, we had some, it was all day long, 10, 12, 14 footers, just with the occasional 16, 18 footer. It was so miserable, TJ, you wouldn't have believed it. My son asked me all day long, Dad, ain't you gonna? He'd go down in the bow and make something to eat and come back up and give it to me, and I'd take one or two bites and give it to him, and he'd say, well, what, Dad, you seasick? I said, no, I'm not seasick, but I didn't want to tell him that you have that uneasy feeling in your stomach when you're so far away from the river and blowing so hard. And usually there's 400 or 500 boats out there, and you can everywhere you look is boats. But on them days, when you look around, all you see is white water, and you don't see a boat in sight.
You didn't want to scare your son.
No, I didn't want him
Dad knows
that I was uneasy.
Dad knows what he's doing. I don't have to worry.
Right, exactly. And I remember being that way because I was a deckhand for my brother from 80 to 85 and remember being out in some of that terrible weather, but never really thought nothing of it because he was the captain. It's a whole different story when you're the captain.
Right. Well, I guess part of what this interview I wanted to get into, I mean, it's amazing that you do that 2 months out of the year. And there's a lot of guys that do it. And the people that you meet, what kind of people do you run into up there? You were telling me something about the Russian people that you met up there.
Yeah, there's a big, they're all Americans, of course, but they all have their Russian religion. And most of them still speak a lot of Russian. And they dress in their colorful clothes. And the women, when they're married, they wear a bonnet instead of a ring. And the men, once they get married, they can't shave their beard.
Oh, really?
And a couple of them that I've met, this one, his name is Jim Melkobunkov. And the name of his boat is the Melko because nobody could pronounce his last name. So they all shortened it to Melko, and he thought it would make a pretty good name for his boat. And so he's called the Melko. And I always tell everybody I could be 50 miles from the harbor and blowing a gale warning, and he could be tying up to the buoy in the river, and if I called him and said, Jim, I just broke down, I don't even think he'd grab the buoy. He would turn and come 5-6 hours to get me and drag me back
home.
Amazing.
That's
the kind of guy he is.
Isn't that something? And you said a lot of those people are like that.
Yeah, unbelievable, some of them.
And is it just they're more humble and appreciate things more, you think? Or?
You know, when I talked to Jim, he said his dad came from Russia. They defected to China. He said he watched, his dad actually watched his dad be taken away into Russian army before they defected to China. The American Red Cross got him from China to South America, where he worked in a tool and die shop. Then from there, Red Cross got him to New Jersey, where he worked in a tool and die shop. And this is where Jim was born. So Jim is as American as
right.
me or you.
Right.
You know, and then from there they moved to Portland, started fishing. From there up to Cordova, Alaska, and then Jim moved into Cook Inlet where he fishes now. And he said that you wouldn't believe that when his dad was having some really good years in the 80s when they were making $250,000 a year fishing.
Wow.
Price of fish was $2 a pound, and they were just making a killing. He said you wouldn't believe the money my dad gave to the Red Cross for
right.
all the help they did to him.
Yeah.
And he always told me that if this country ever goes to war, he said, you will go fight as an American.
So they really have it. And this is, you know, my parents, my mom was an immigrant, and it's just a different understanding and appreciation for things, I think, that we all take for granted, or maybe some of us don't, but most of us take for granted because we haven't lived through it.
Yeah,
you know, it's
exactly.
almost like we, and especially like the people, you knew people that lived in the Depression, different attitude, very appreciative of things, pretty humble about things, realizing that it could happen again, and maybe it's actually happening right now. So I guess where I was going with all this is that it's a different life that most of us are not going to see up in that area. Where I live in the 48 states down here, completely different world.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's, and you think, because to me, Alaska is all their beaches and their roads and their gravel is all black like lava sand. So to me, it seems dirty, and it's not dirty. It's just everything is dark. God, the beaches are dark. We're here. The beaches are white. The gravel is white. Everything's white. It's just something as simple as gravel.
Right.
That's how much different it is. You know what I mean?
You just don't realize it. And then the light. And so you got to be pretty hardy to live up in Alaska, I'm guessing, right?
Oh, yeah. You would. And to see some of the things they live in and go through that 30 below, I can't, because up there there's no building codes. And here you'd never think of staying in a motorhome. for the winter. And up there, it's just unbelievable.
Do you think your body? Do you think your body adapts?
Oh, definitely.
And so, you know, because I heard a really, there was, I don't know if you ever watched this show. These two guys, dual survivor.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
The one guy is a hippie.
Yeah, yeah. Bare feet all the time in shorts.
He was on an island in Nova Scotia. It was snowing out. There was snow. He was not cold because his body, he said, over 20 years adapted. He might put on a pair of socks. This whole time they were on the island. I thought, that's got to be so true. If we all conditioned our body to that, this is how people survive in different climates.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because up there all year long, the day before I left, I seen the bank sign said 66 degrees, but for most of the summer, 54, 56, 57, and the day it was 66 degrees, everyone that was actually a native that lives up there, they're all complaining, oh, God, can't wait for winter. Oh, it's so hot, and I'm going, you got to be kidding me, you guys.
Isn't that something? So,
and then I was up there a few winters ago when times were tough before we had these good seasons. I went up there and actually worked with my nephew as a carpenter the month of February and March. And it was late in March, and I went into the Holiday gas station, and it was about 40 degrees out, kind of sunny. And they had the doors open, and there was kind of a breeze coming through. And I said to the lady, I said, wow, it sure is chilly in here. And she says, where are you from? She knew right away that I wasn't from Alaska. And I said, I'm from Michigan. She says, I see you haven't acclimated to our weather yet.
It's the human body's got to be able to do it. Otherwise, there's no way. I think that it just tells you how amazing it is. Now, speaking of amazing, Tom has told me something that I'm not going to go into detail about, but it was a life-changing moment for you recently. Would you say something like that?
Yeah, pretty good.
And it was kind of a wake-up call a little bit, right? And you discovered this tea, and I've heard people talk. I probably had people on my show. What is the name of this tea that helps people with cancer? It's Essiac, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And a man told you about this. You got it for your sister-in-law, right?
Yeah, she was suffering with like a blood disease, like a cancer in her blood.
And how's she doing now? How long has she been on it?
She's been on it maybe... Well, since about the end of the week or so after the Dickinson County Fair. So a week or two after Labor Day.
Yeah, okay. And she's doing pretty good now?
She's doing pretty good again.
She's doing
her
better?
Blood count's way up. Everything's back to where it should be. And
so it's helping her. And you've heard other people have taken this stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And see, that's what I've heard. And I'm really interested when I hear these things because there are so many things out there that, you know, maybe it's not a death sentence, and maybe there are other options. And maybe sometimes if you can find a natural alternative, it's going to be healthier for you. It's not going to destroy your organs within your body. So I like it when people share those stories. But this was kind of a, shall we say, a spiritual wake-up call for Tom. And I asked you if you felt, and I'm going to ask you now, if you don't mind me putting you on the spot, because, you know, this show, I like these kind of things. They're close to my heart. Doing something good. You felt like you were almost kind of destined to help out the sister-in-law. And
yes.
And I asked you about helping others or doing good things. Does it come back to you? And you felt it does.
Oh, tenfold.
So you were telling me a story. Do you mind telling the story again about this dolphin? Because I said, you know, I believe everything was put here by God or a divine source, and we are allowed to coexist with it, but we should respect it. And if we eat these animals, I don't think that's a bad thing, but if you just kill a life and you know, I told you the story about that squirrel that was bugging me. I had a squirrel in my yard years ago, and I was tempted to blow its head off, but I didn't. And I think that was a good thing because it comes back to you. So you fish out there, you probably catch other things besides fish, right?
Yeah, usually you don't catch nothing but salmon. And you do see a few dolphins or porpoises out there, but their sonar and that is so good that they dip down below the net. They don't ever seem to even come close to your net. And just one day there, we happened to be lifting, and we're all excited because the fish are just hanging, and you don't think nothing about killing the poor fish, you know, but, and you're all excited. And then all of a sudden I see something down a ways coming up out of the water. I thought it was a shark tearing into my net. And as I get closer here, it's a young dolphin, about 80 pounds. And so we get him on board and get him out of the net, and you can see he's struggling pretty bad. He's breathing pretty hard through his blowhole. And, we calm him down. I sit right down, and I pet on him for a while, and keep pouring water on him. And we just had a little bit of net left, so I didn't want to let him go with the chance of him going back into it. So we finished picking the net, got the net in, and seemed to be better, calmed down. We set him in the water, and sure enough, you could see he stayed pretty close to the surface, breathing real often, surfacing. And he went out just a little ways and turned around, and I said to my deckhand, Scotty, I said, Scotty, here he comes. And he come right back, come right up alongside the boat, as if to almost like he was trying to thank us. And as he come by the boat, he just kept on going and slowly disappeared outside.
Isn't that amazing? Do you think that's a coincidence?
I actually think he was thanking us, because I think he thought we were going to hurt him at first.
Right.
And then, because we had him on board for,
so what does that tell you about
10 minutes.
Animals and how they're connected to us? I mean, have you ever noticed that before in your life?
Not like that. Not.
And I've had a lot of those things I told you about. So that's cool. That's just a really, and then what happened after you did that? You told me more about that. Remember you said you did this good thing for this dolphin?
Oh, well, then it wasn't so much that. It was, it seemed like we were catching fish early in the year this year, but not so, you know, we'd be into the fish, but the people in our group, they might get a few more. And I was coming into the river, and I could see that there, all the boats, when you're going into the river, you can see the stern of the boats as they're headed for the river. And there's one boat laying in the trough, and I could see that the boats were actually going out of their way to
avoid it,
avoid him, because they
and you weren't catching a lot of fish at the time,
and I was just doing so. It seemed like I was doing average in our fleet. If the highliner in our group caught 1,000 fish, I might only have 700 that day. And so I could see everybody was avoiding him, and I could see he was laying in the trough, and it looked like he had trouble, and he was only a few miles from the river. So I went up alongside of him. Sure enough, he was having boat trouble, so I hooked onto him, towed him into the river, and he was more than grateful and wanted to give me this and that. And I just asked him if he ever see me in trouble out there, you know, to come and help me. And for some reason, it seemed like, I don't know if it was that or not, but it seemed like after that, I could do nothing wrong. It seemed like everywhere I went, everywhere I set my net, and I could take off, there would be 150 boats in a section, and the fishing would slow up, and I would take off and go somewhere all by myself and lay that net out, and it would just come alive with fish.
So do you believe it's connected?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think.
And you did this, you know, a lot of people, like you and I were talking before we did this, I do things to help others at times totally unselfishly, because I want to do that. But there's times I do it because I don't want to look like an idiot. You know, like, oh, you're not going to help out this group of people? It's like, come on. It's like, okay. So sometimes grudgingly, you know, maybe I'm busy and I don't always want to do that. So it seems like when you give freely without expectation in return.
Well, I just know that if I was floating out there, that I sure would thank and respect anyone that ever came up and helped me out. And
but it seems like it's
the harbor.
It's almost like a law of the universe.
Oh,
what
definitely.
You do unto others can really come back to you.
Oh, I
almost
sure
some people
that.
Would say karma, and here's a good example.
I believe in that big time.
Didn't you have that happen like before too? Did you tell me a story like a couple of years ago about something like that?
Same thing, almost. A buddy in our group actually, and it was midway through the day. And we were having a great day, and everyone was catching lots of fish. He gets the brailer bag, one of his brailer bags that hold the fish. He was rinsing it off the stern, and his deckhand tied it to the back cleat. Well, when he threw the boat in gear, it sucked the brailer bag into the prop, and there he was, dead in the water, 40 miles from home.
Mm.
Well, the outgoing tide, I'm the closest one to him. So I run over and I grab him. Well, that pretty well ends my day. Everyone ends up with 1,000, 1,200 fish. I only catch 300, 400, miss out on probably...
And this really means a lot to you and your family.
Oh, because I missed out on probably $3,000-$4,000 that day.
And every cent really matters to you. It's not like you can go and say, I don't miss it.
And I was actually, I was depressed, and I called my wife that night because she always wants to know how I do at the end of the fishing day. Right. And I told her what happened, and she told me not to worry. This was actually the when... And it seemed like after that, then she was right. I went out and I couldn't do nothing wrong. So actually, when I seen that guy floating this year, that kind of went through my mind. And I thought, let's go help this guy.
Yeah.
Because it didn't do me nothing but good the last time I did it. You know what I mean? Let's go help this guy and see if this will change it. And I'm telling you, it seems to come back tenfold.
Yeah, that's what they say, isn't it? And that's amazing. Yep. And I think it's awesome that you share a story like that. So what is it that you really love doing that up there? Or is that just something you do to...
TJ, I've done a lot of different things. Like I said, I've been a carpenter, a sawyer at a sawmill, superintendent at a golf course. I've done it all, and it seems like I always come back to fishing, and it's the neatest fishery I've ever seen, because I fished here on the Great Lakes with the trap netters and that, and you set your net, you come back the next day or so, and you see what's in your net. Up there, you lay out 1,000 feet of floating gill net, and when the fish, they're running near the top of the water, so when the bunches of fish hit the net, they explode out of the water, and it just is amazing. Me and my son this year went up to a rip. It's where the current is, the tide is, second largest tides in the world, 25-footers. So when the tide switches, the tide along the beach will start going out where it'll still be trickling in the center of the inlet, so it causes like what they call a rip tide. And me and my boy come up to a riptide this year fishing, and I said, let's make a set on this streak. And usually it's full of logs and junk. It didn't seem like there was nothing in it. And as we laid that net out, it literally, up and down that 900 feet, there'd be 200 fish coming out here, 100 fish coming out at the other end, 50 fish coming out right behind the boat. It just exploded, and within 10 minutes we had about 1,000 fish in the net. And it was then everyone starts, boats start running by you and seeing all these fish. Yeah, they start laying out. Next thing you know, the rip is trying to bring everybody together, and you're towing and picking and pulling, and things are happening. It's total chaos. This is unbelievable.
But it's a moment that you feel alive.
It's
like any other.
My son said he wishes he would have had a camera that day, because he said there was one time he said I was down on my knees and I was trying to drag the net out of the rip, and the steering wheel is real low in the stern, so it's a little bit easier if I get right down on my knees. I'm right down on my knees, and I've got the hands on the controls, and he said, Dad, it was raining out, and he said, your hair was soaked. He said, there were scales all over your face from picking, and he said, you had that look on your face like, I'm getting that net out of this rip this time. Because when there's three nets out there, I can't drag on them. Once we had it down to one net, now I can finally tow on it a little bit. And I was trying to tow to get out of everybody else's way, because I'm looking up ahead and I can see a couple guys all tangled up. Mm-hmm. And even further up that, my brother comes along up alongside of me. He had just got done picking, and he said, Tom, just up another half a mile, there's trees, big giant trees in this rip. He says, you got to get out of this rip or you're going to have a mess. And so finally I gets that last net out of there and pulls it away from the rip, picks the fish. And sure enough, when I get done picking the fish and head north a little bit to try to get into the fish again, there's a couple guys and they got giant trees in their net. And oh, it just looks like a nightmare. But so, it does. It sure makes you know you're alive, that's for sure.
Well, I wish we had more time to talk. I have to cut us short on this. Is there anything else you want to add to this at all, Tom?
No. It's
look for the fish house.
Yeah, look for the fish house. TJ, he's a good man.
You are too. I really admire the way you live your life and I've seen your family and how they pull together. It reminds me of the way things used to be, and maybe the way things are going to be down the road for many of us, you know?
Got to take care of family.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.